Happy me vinitasya. Kshatram gauram upheyusha. Surucha durvacho banayar. Nabineshayate hridi. My dear Lord, I am very impudent for not accepting your instructions. But this is not my fault. It is due to my having been born in a Kshatriya family. My stepmother, Suruchi, has pierced my heart with her harsh words. Therefore, your valuable instructions does not stand in my heart. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. It is said that the heart or mind is just like an earthen pot. Once broken, it cannot be repaired by any means. Dhruva Maharaj gave this example to Narada Muni. He said that his heart, having been pierced by the arrows of his mother's, stepmother's harsh words, felt so broken that nothing seemed valuable but his desire to counteract her insult. His stepmother had said that because he was born from the womb of Suniti, a neglected queen of Maharaj Uttanapada, Dhruva Maharaj was not fit to seat either on the throne of his father's lap. In other words, according to his stepmother, he could not be declared king. Dhruva Maharaj's determination, therefore, was to become king of a planet, exalted even beyond that possessed by Lord Brahma, the greatest of all the demigods. Dhruva Maharaj indirectly informed the great sage Narada that there are four kinds of human spirit: the Brahminical spirit, the Kshatriya spirit, the Vaishya spirit, and the Shudra spirit. The spirit of one caste is not applicable to the members of another. The philosophical spirit enunciated by Narada Muni might have been suitable for a Brahmin spirit, but it was not suitable for a Kshatriya. Dhruva frankly admitted that he was lacking in Brahminical humility and was therefore unable to accept the philosophy of Narada Muni. The statements of Dhruva Maharaj indicate that unless a child is trained according to his tendency, there is no possibility of his developing in his particular spirit. It was the duty of the spiritual master or teacher to observe the psychological movement of a particular boy and thus train him in a particular occupational duty. Dhruva Maharaj, having already been trained in the Kshatriya spirit, would not accept the Brahminical philosophy. In America, we have practical inexperience of this incompatibility of the Brahminical and Kshatriya temperaments. The American boys who have simply been trained as Shudras are not at all fit to fight in battle. Therefore, when they are called to join the military, they refuse because they do not have Kshatriya spirit. This is a cause of great dissatisfaction in society. That the boys do not have the Kshatriya spirit does not mean that they are trained in Brahminical qualities. They are trained as Shudras, and thus in frustration, they are becoming hippies. However, as soon as they enter the Krishna consciousness movement being started in America, they are trained to meet the Brahminical qualifications, even though they have fallen to the lowest conditions as Shudras. In other words, since the Krishna consciousness movement is open for everyone, people in general can attain Brahminical qualifications. This is the greatest need at the present moment. For now, there are actually no Brahmins or Kshatriyas, but only some Vaishyas and, for the most part, Shudras. The classification of society into Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras is very scientific. In the human social body, the Brahmins are considered the head, the Kshatriyas are the arms, the Vaishyas are the belly, and the Shudras are the legs. At the present moment, the body has legs and a belly, but there are no arms or head, and therefore society is topsy-turvy. It is necessary to re-establish the Brahminical qualifications in order to raise the fallen human society to the highest standard of spiritual consciousness. Srila Prabhupada is emphasizing the great need of spiritual training within society. Without training, without discipline, the tendency in this material world is for the consciousness to go down. We have laws of gravity. In the spiritual world, there is no such laws of gravity. But in the material world, everything is subjected to this law. That means everything's nature is simply to go down. To go down and down and down and down until it reached the bottomless point that it could go, the bottom. If you go top of a building and drop an object, it won't just fall halfway or three-fourths way. It goes to the very bottommost point it could possibly go. That is the law of nature. And on the subtle plane, that law is also very much the standard. You see, in this temple, today they will be working on installing this beautiful window. So much trouble to build this scaffolding, just so they don't fall down. When you build a building or a house, the foundational structure is so very, very essential. Because if a building is not structurally sound, it will fall down. And it takes a tremendous amount of intelligence and work to create anything with proper structure. It is said the bigger they are, the harder they fall. It's like September 11th. They chose the largest building in all of New York City, third largest building on the planet Earth. If it was just one of the little huts near the airport in Bombay, wouldn't have caused too much damage. So the bigger something is, the higher it is, when it doesn't have proper support, it falls way, 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 way down. Similarly, we never see rivers flowing upward. They always flow downstream, from the mountains to the sea. sea level is considered the lowest place. So the rivers, by nature, are flowing to the sea. And similarly, in our consciousness, if we are not very diligent to maintain standards, then our consciousness individually and collectively will go down to immorality, to sinful activity, to egoistic sense gratification, to politics. What is politics? Politics, Ramananda Rai was a politician. Raghunath Das Goswami was also an expert politician. But their politics was using their good intelligence and diplomacy for the welfare of others in the service of Krishna. However, when politics is motivated by the false ego, it becomes horribly destructive on the emotional, spiritual, and physical levels. When there is politics, people cannot trust each other. Where there is no trust, there can be no real love. When there is no love and trust, it's simply everybody is in it for themselves. There can be real no unity. Unless we have a common purpose, there's no question of unity. In this material world, everyone has their purpose to satisfy their own mind and their own senses. Therefore, there is so much chaos, individually, collectively, nationally, internationally. So training is required. And training means discipline. If we rise early in the morning, if we chant our 16 rounds as attentive as possible, if we hear Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and the holy scriptures, this is a discipline. This is training. We may feel like it, we may not feel like it. That isn't even a factor to consider. Unless we're on a spontaneous platform with pure hearts, our tendency is to go down. We have to be constantly fighting against that tendency. Bhagavad Gita was spoken on the battlefield, historically, but also there is a symbolic significance to this. That to make any spiritual life, any spiritual progress in this world of ignorance, you have to fight a battle. And when you're on the battlefield, you can't be lazy. You can't be inattentive, or you'll be defeated. And that is a fact. We have to be very, very strict with ourselves. We have to fight against our inner tendencies toward comfort and sense gratification, and especially false ego. It will never go away by itself. Sometimes we're thinking, let me just become 30 years old. Then it will go away by itself. When I reach 40, it will go away by itself. When I reach 50, half century, then it'll go away by itself. When I reach 60, age of retirement, then it will retire by itself. When I reach 70, then I'm just a dried up old fig, raisin-like, personality, then it will go away by itself. When I reach 80, when I reach 90, when I reach 100, birth after birth after birth, the false ego, the tendency for material comfort and sense gratification will never go away by itself. Because we are all subjected to the laws of material nature, where everything is being pushed down by the subtle and gross gravitational forces of ignorance. The nature of this world is darkness. In darkness, you need to establish light. In the spiritual world, there's no need for a sun or a moon. But in this world, when it's dark, the darkness just doesn't go away. The sun has to rise. That means an object of light must come. So the nature of this world is darkness. The nature of this world is everything is going to go down. If we want to elevate ourselves, we have to struggle. We can see this also through sociological history. Srila Prabhupada is talking about America in this purport. In the early days of the development of America, it was always said, God bless America. People were seeking blessings of God. As far as the present civilization of people from other parts of the world who have developed this nation, it was established by people who were looking for morality and religion. That's all. These early settlers of America, they performed tremendous austerities for religious freedom. They were persecuted in Europe and various places because they had different religious ideals than the king or than others. And they didn't want to compromise. They could have easily just sold out to the what they considered the hypocritical religious system of the society around them. They refused to do that. They had their faith. They had their religious conceptions, and they wanted to be free to live by them. So they got on these big boats, and they sailed across the sea, risking their lives. They got to this country, which was really like a big, big jungle. And the people who were living there, they were actually very nice people. But they usurped their land, and then they were constantly fighting wars with them. All because they wanted to follow their religions. And they wanted that freedom. And they took such risks and worked so hard. They were really trying to live by their conceptions of moral principles. And on that basis, they had Shakti, and they created such a powerful nation. Roman Empire did the same thing. At the beginning of the Roman Empire, there was much morality and culture, as with the Greek Empire, philosophy, morality, culture. But the tendency is, when you become big, when generations go by, people stop the sacrifice. People stop really striving for those high ideals. And then gradually, the entire society becomes decadent, immoral, and useless. And then gradually it falls. We're talking about this law of gravity. Every empire that has ever been on this earth has fallen. Roman Empire, a major portion of the world they controlled. Fallen. They have nothing left except one little country, the size of a boot, they say. The British Empire conquered most of the world, fell. The Greek Empire fell. Similarly, the American Empire, it's just a matter of time till it falls. And the historians, they all tell us the same thing. What happens before each one of these empires falls? Lack of discipline, lack of training, lack of morality. People just let their mind and said they may be working tremendously hard, you know, to build buildings and to make economic solutions to problems. But the inner content of their ethics, morality, and devotion to God deteriorates. And therefore, they all fall, they all become terribly political, and the sinful reactions of all of their abominable activities just makes everything just in a state of destruction. So that is the law of nature. We must understand this very carefully. If you're not struggling to go up, you're going to go down. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada is emphasizing there must be training. There must be discipline. We must fight against our mind and senses. We must fight against the forces of ignorance that are surrounding us. And that fighting doesn't mean with guns and knives and swords and bombs. That fighting means with determination to live by the principles of truth. Because ultimately, truth will conquer everything. Just like Krishna explains in the Gita, when the sun rises, there's no need for any extraneous endeavor to remove light. It's automatically removed. When there is truth, when we live by truth, automatically all darkness, all ignorance is dispelled. And Srila Prabhupada is describing about these four varnas and four ashrams. A real civilized society is where people are trained accordingly. If you're going to be a brahmachari, there needs to be training as a brahmachari. There needs to be discipline. And if you just let the ashram be what it's going to be, it's no longer a brahmachari ashram. It's just a political arena for all kinds of ego and sense gratification amongst people who wear saffron and have shaved heads. That's not a brahmachari ashram. Maybe in form, but not in spirit. Real brahmachari ashram is where people are actually being trained as brahmacharis. And what is a brahmachari? Brahmachari is disciplined. No job, no profession, as far as professional income. It simply depends on the mercy of Krishna. Very strict. In our Gaudiya Sampradaya, brahmachari, Srila Prabhupada trainers, Mangal Arati, chanting rounds nicely every day, studying the scriptures with discipline, living by the scriptures, no politics, learning the virtue of humility, unity, servant of the servant, willing to do anything and everything at any time in the service of Guru and the Vaishnavas, that's brahmachari. Without those principles, brahmachari is a hoax. Must be training, must be discipline. And unless we create an environment where those things are protected, it's very, very difficult for any ordinary person to follow them. Because we're so much affected by the environment. You can take the same person and put him in a good, in a bad environment, and the person will just become a political, egoistic madman. Take the same person and put him in a gentle, humble, spiritual environment, and the person will become a saintly person. It's a fact. So it is our duty to create such an environment. And there has to be principles, there has to be rules, there has to be policies, there has to be laws of what is acceptable and what is not acceptable. What is acceptable must be encouraged and inspired, and what is unacceptable must be rooted out. Cannot be allowed. Sometimes in the name of mercy to one person, you're absolutely merciless to everyone else by letting that person spoil the entire environment. So we must understand the necessity of training. But in Vaishnavism, that training is done with a spirit of love and compassion. Those who are training should not be training on the basis of their own egos. Because what is the use if people become very staunch and very strict, if their hearts become hard? The tendency of austerities is to create a hard, egoistic heart. Unless they're being done under proper supervision, with proper example. Our discipline and austerity should be performed in such a way that our heart becomes soft like butter, very compassionate, very loving, very gentle, but at the same time very strict. Srila Prabhupada explained, a good leader is hard like a thunderbolt and soft like a rose. One without the other just doesn't work. If you're just soft like a rose, you can't really train anybody. There will be deviations, there will be politics, and if we're just soft like a rose and just, oh, you are nice, very nice, then it will, like an epidemic, it will destroy the sanctity of the Sangham. So there has to be certain times, places where one has to be hard like a thunderbolt to give ultimatums. This is wrong, it cannot be. But what happens if you're just hard like a thunderbolt? Hare Krishna. If we're just hard like thunderbolt, then there can be no bhakti that grows through that situation. We'll just burn everybody out. We'll just electrocute everyone's enthusiasm. Soft like a rose is absolutely essential. We have to cultivate and train people how to be gentle, how to be kind, how to be respectful, how to be loving, how to be dear to Krishna and dear to the Vaishnavas. Not rule over the Vaishnavas, but be dear to the Vaishnavas. The thunderbolt is only used when it's absolutely necessary. Otherwise, soft like rose. And even when using the thunderbolt, the heart is soft like a rose. And we see great souls like Maharaj Yudhisthira, Maharaj Parikshit. So kind, so loving, without discrimination to everyone. The whole society loved them. Maharaj Yudhisthira, Maharaj Parikshit, they treated every citizen in the entire planet with the same love and affection that a mother or father gives to their child. That's how gentle they were. But when Kali was inflicting his egoistic ways on an innocent cow, he became like a thunderbolt, ready to destroy him in a second. That is leadership. And that is how devotees should be trained. With love, with compassion, with forgiveness. But at the same time, strict to maintain the principles. In Grihastha Ashram, training is required. In the traditional Indian family, it was joint family system. Where when a young boy and young girl are married, they're living with their mothers and their fathers and their uncles and their aunties and their grandfathers and their grandmothers and their elder brothers and their elder sisters, and they all have a lot of experience of what it means to live with the opposite sex and be responsible and not totally fry each other out. Hare Krishna. So they're there to train you. Traditionally, the mother-in-law just trains up the daughter-in-law. Father trains the son. This is how you do it. But of course, if they're not training in a spirit of Krishna consciousness, then it's simply material. But in today's society, very little training. In the Western world, there's no such thing as a joint family. They never heard of such a thing. Boy picks a girl, girl picks a boy, usually just for physical or emotional reasons, without any real direction. And they just try to make it out on their own. And therefore, within 3 years, there's a 70% divorce rate. Because they just don't know what they're supposed to do. And now we're just talking about Grihamedis. Just to stay together properly in a family of Grihamedis, you need training. Really? The joint families in India, the training, it's just to train you to just stay together as Grihamedis, that's all. If you don't have that training, you can't even remain Grihamedis. But if you want to be Grihastha, that means Krishna's in the center. That means spiritual training, along with everything else. They're both required. The husband and wife just sit and read Bhagavad Gita without understanding how to deal with each other and what to do with each other and how to manage their life and their income and their, you know, who takes supervision over what areas of the home. Huh? And what happens is Kurukshetra. Hare Krishna. And most houses are like Kurukshetra. So there has to be training. Training on the principles of the social behavior that's required within the family. And also training on how to spiritualize it all. And maintain a proper balance between worldly responsibilities and sadhana and direct devotional activities. how to balance the relationships we have with materialistic relatives, materialistic society and business associates, and with devotees, sadhu sangha. You can't just figure it out on your own. By the time you figure it out, you've already created such a unbelievable mess. It's too late. Hare Krishna. So therefore, grihasthas need training. And if the parents and the uncles and the aunties, they may be able to train you in certain things, but if they can't train you, they may be able to train you to be a good grihamedi. Unless they're very, very serious devotees, they cannot train you to be a grihastha. Grihastha means surrender to Krishna is the ultimate goal of everything we do. Therefore, we need senior grihasthas to train grihasthas in the spiritual aspects and the social aspects of married life. And if there's not training, we have seen with our own eyes that the marriage becomes like cats and dogs. It just goes down. Unrestricted sex life, unrestricted anger, which is born of the frustration of too much sex life, unrestricted spending of money on useless things. Hare Krishna. Negligence of children, the real needs of the children. And vanaprasthas and sannyasis, by the time you attain the state of vanaprastha, you're already a very highly trained, realized person in the Vedic civilization. It's not that you're born as a vanaprastha. Vanaprasthas, in the traditional sense, they have gone through the strict discipline of training of brahmacharis. They've gone through the strict discipline of training of grihasthas. And by the time they're old and they're retired, still some training is required of how to readjust. But they're very highly realized souls. There's no turning back for them. And sannyasis. What it really means to be a sannyasi. What are the principles of a sannyasi? It requires much, much education and training. So these are the two factors that are very much necessary and missing in today's society. Education and training. Not just education of how to make money. We have plenty of that in the world. But education of how to actually live in harmony with the true principles of human life. We need to be educated on the importance and the means by which we can become humble, respectful, gentle, responsible, and dedicated exclusively in the service of God. And Srila Prabhupada is explaining he was taking people who were being trained as sudras, or at the most, some tinges of Vaishya. Because that's what the Western world is all about. He's talking about the Vietnam War, where people were being drafted. And I have many friends, godbrothers, associates who were in that Vietnam War. And they were telling me that because it was so much against their nature to be in such a fearful condition of people shooting at you, you're going to die at any moment. They weren't heroic. Most of the people fighting in that war were completely intoxicated on heroin, on marijuana, on various hard drugs, because they just couldn't deal with the pressures and the fears of the battle. That was the only way they could maintain sanity, is to become drug addicts or alcoholics. And a major portion of people who came back from that war, when they came back to America, they were drug addicts and alcoholics. And they needed all kinds of therapy. Now, if they were actually trained as Kshatriyas, then they would go to the... They would be running. They wouldn't have to be drafted. People were trying to get out of the draft. Do you want to hear about this? Yeah? I'll give some examples. Practically everyone, they would do anything to not have to go to that war. And they were being drafted. When you're drafted, you go to jail if you don't go to war. So thousands of people. I know one person. I'm not going to tell you all the things he did. But I know one person. He took a type of drug that really pollutes your blood. He didn't eat or sleep for 1 week. He put needle marks in his veins so he looked like a drug addict. During his urine test, he took a needle and secretly pricked his finger and squeezed blood into his urine. And he went into the draft board when he was called. He looked like a zombie. Can you imagine? No eating or sleeping for a week. Just staying up on the basis of just these speed drugs and amphetamines, they're called. They make you awake. Amphetamines, they're addicting drugs. He didn't bathe or change his clothes for a month. He looked like a total madman. And he went in to get his physical and mental exam, and they just looked at him, and they said, you know something? There's hundreds and thousands of people doing just like this to try to get out of the draft. There's nothing wrong with you. And they drafted him. And then that person, the next thing he knows, he's in the jungles of Vietnam with a rifle in his hand and there's people shooting at him. And he's thinking, I don't want to be here. I don't even like America. Why am I fighting for it? So they just start taking drugs and smoking marijuana just to cope with the total misery of the situation. But Kshatriyas, when they see there's a battle, let me go! I'll get out there, I'll taste their blood, and I'll see their flesh all over the place. That's the way Kshatriyas are. They're like sharks. The smell of blood enlivens them. Yes? Srinachi Prabhu. Something like that. And people, you have to have some sort of an inner nature to be like that, but also you need training. You take somebody off the street and put them in a battlefield, how do you go? Training is required. And similarly, Brahmins. So Prabhupada's explaining here that take a Shudra and put him in a battlefield and he'll just become completely frustrated. Put a Kshatriya in the battlefield and he can do what 1,000 Shudras can't do. Because he's fearless. Because he has a cause. He has an ideal. So Srila Prabhupada, he took people who were raised as Shudras, and he actually made them into some of the most highly qualified Brahmins in all the world through education and training.
real leaders, spiritual leaders.
So if we want to actually have a real society of Vaishnavas, we must understand very carefully the absolute necessity of education, discipline, and training in a spirit of humility. That doesn't come automatically in this world. We have to be trained and train ourselves to live by these principles. Srila Prabhupada told us to chant 16 rounds every day, follow the four regulative principles. Devotee asked Prabhupada at New Vrindavan, what if we have this weakness of heart and we have these shortcomings that we're just not able to do it? Prabhupada said, rectify it. It's discipline. If Prabhupada didn't take that stand, no one would have ever come to the standard. If someone couldn't do it, in principle, he would be uncompromising. But in spirit, to whatever extent a devotee was able or willing, he would encourage them. He would be uncompromising in the principle, but extremely merciful, kind, and tolerant to help anyone at whatever level they may be on. That is leadership. If we just become fanatics, you're either in or out. You're the other of the standard, or you're out. That's not a preacher. If you compromise the standard, no one will ever attain the standard. We have to be very strict, very uncompromising. But at the same time, a person who cannot follow it, a merciful devotee like Srila Prabhupada, and what he expected all of us to be, is to be very encouraging to somehow or other come down to that person's platform and try to bring him up to the standard. Srila Prabhupada is also discussing in this purport what Dhruva Maharaj is expressing to Narada Muni in regard to the condition of his heart. See, Narada Muni is telling him he should be a good Brahmin. Don't worry about such stupid, insignificant, superficial things like being insulted. Just go home, you're a small child. And he was explaining to him, you know, how we should be equal in every situation. But Dhruva Maharaj is saying that your instruction just cannot stand in my heart, because my heart has been pierced by the harsh words of my stepmother. This line that Srila Prabhupada is speaking is so very essential for us to really deeply comprehend. It is said that the heart or mind is just like an earthen pot. Once broken, it cannot be repaired by any means. This is how we must learn to deal with other people. Like an earthen pot, we should see the heart or the mind of every devotee in this light. There are many examples in Srila Prabhupada's life. One devotee actually acted very irresponsibly, immorally, and unethically. And, of course, that devotee would have to be removed from his position and he would have to be rectified. And Srila Prabhupada was willing to do that. And he expected his leaders to also do that. However, what happened is devotees just started speaking gossip and rumors about the person in an antagonistic way. The person's heart was broken. And Srila Prabhupada said that we could help this person rectify the mistakes he's done. But now he's gone. Because you have pierced his heart by spreading these nasty rumors against him, nasty gossip, spreading these information irresponsible and immature way. Now, he said, it will be practically impossible for him to come back because there's so much shame upon him. Prabhupada was more angry with the people who were gossiping about it than he was with the person who fell down. If someone does something wrong, even if it's true, it is very, very irresponsible to broadcast it as a rumor or to broadcast it. Because once it starts being broadcast, it becomes gossip. And then all sorts of other ornamentation comes about on the original principle. The person's heart is broken. Sometimes in extreme situations, when people try to exploit and attack the principles of leaders who are trying to maintain standards, then you have to attack, then you have to publicly broadcast. Sometimes that is necessary in extreme cases. But in general, if a person just due to weakness of heart or whatever, whoever's dealing with them should deal with them. Whoever's supposed to help to rectify them should rectify them. And others should just mind their own business. There are many, many devotees who have been alienated from our society and probably every spiritual society in the world due to their hearts being broken. And there are many ways, innumerable ways, to break a person's heart. And we must be very, very, very careful. Srila Prabhupada's standard, if a person has fallen, don't compromise the principles, but at the same time, try to somehow or other, whatever punishment is required should be done in such a way, along with the encouragement to atone, to rectify, and to improve. Not in such a way that it's impossible for the person to ever face devotees again. Bhakti means relationships. Without healthy relationships, we cannot spiritually grow. And every relationship we have with every other Vaishnava is very, very sacred. And we should be very aware of how to protect that, develop it. It is said that the heart or mind is just like an earthen pot. Once broken, it cannot be repaired by any means. We'll give an extreme example. The example of Kal Krishnadas. He was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's personal servant during his South Indian tour. But he fell down. He actually left Lord Chaitanya's service right in the middle of the tour, somewhere in Karnataka. He left the Lord's service because he was seduced by these Bataharis. Bataharis were tantrics, and they knew the art of recruiting followers by seducing them with beautiful young women and various tantric mantras. So one night he just left Lord Chaitanya's service and joined the Bataharis. Hare Krishna. But Lord Chaitanya was merciful. He didn't just say, he blooped, let him die. He went right into the camp of the Bataharis. Such mercy. And he said, give me my servant back. You are all sannyasis. He was saying that just because he was... That was a type of transcendental diplomacy, because they would dress themselves as sannyasis. So they, you are sannyasi, I am sannyasi. And you need servant, I need my servant too. So you should not take them. So they attacked Mahaprabhu with weapons. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he didn't have to do anything. That's what kind of a great soul the Supreme Personality of Godhead is. He didn't do anything. The weapons came out of the hands of the Bataharis and attacked them. What an incredible scene. And they were running away from their own weapons. Their weapons were just in the... There were swords in the air just stabbing people. And axes in the air cutting off their limbs. And big clubs in the air crashing against their heads. And as they were running, they were just following behind. Crash, crash, stab, stab, slash, slash, chop. They were screaming in agony. Blood everywhere. Running, running, running. And Lord Chaitanya grabbed his servant and preached to him. Kal Krishnadas woke up from his bewilderment and faithfully served the Lord again. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as a leader, he had to maintain high principles. If you just let him get away with that, it would have been a very, very bad precedent for others. So he just, right in the face, in front of Kala Krishnadas, he looked at Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and others and said, he has acted irresponsibly. He betrayed me. Therefore, I will not accept his service anymore. He was shattered. He was devastated. So, it's very instructive to understand how the devotees dealt with this. Could you imagine the rumors that they could have started? Could you imagine the gossip that could have infiltrated Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's satsang of Vaishnavas? Did you hear what Kal Krishnadas did? Did you hear what he did? Nobody did that. No gossip. Because they were mature. What's the use of talking about these? If you can't do something constructive to help someone, then you shouldn't. It's none of your business to talk about their defects or their faults or what they've done. The only time we ever do it is if that person is trying to influence other people to deviate, either morally or philosophically. Then we have to come out publicly and say, no. Otherwise, it's none of our business. Lord Chaitanya, he's dealing with the rectification. And we have to honor that. So we have to be mature. This whispering and talking and gossiping just creates politics, breaks people's hearts irreparably. So what did they do? They realize he can't be in the association of Lord Chaitanya or serve him because he has to rectify. This is his rectification. They honored that. But at the same time, with great love and kindness, they instead of gossiping, they spoke, how can we engage him in another way to purify himself? And they gave him another service. Go to Navadvip, Santipur, tell Sachi Devi and all the devotees all about the leelas that you saw of the Lord and report that he has returned. So instead of trying to kick him in the face because of his fall down, they try to encourage him and elevate him as a friend. That is Vaishnav. And that is how Srila Prabhupada dealt with these types of situations. And in Kali Yuga, a person doesn't even have to make a mistake. They don't even have to fall down. We break people's hearts for no reason at all. Just because of an irresponsible, reckless, uncontrolled tongue. Hare Krishna. First verse of Upadeshamrita, nectar of instruction, the basic principles that devotees have to live by. That one must learn to control the tongue, the urge to speak. It's very difficult to do this. It's more difficult to control the urge to speak even than the urge to eat. Because I've seen people doing near Jali Kadasi and talking all nonsense. But we're responsible for everything we speak. We have to be thoughtful. We should make sure whatever we speak will actually be constructive and not destructive. It will be in a spirit of service rather than in a spirit of negligence. Therefore, we should be very much eager to chant the holy names of the Lord, speak the teachings and glories of the Lord, and speak the good qualities of Vaishnavas. And if actually we have a particular responsibility of service by which it's necessary to speak about the faults of another, then we will. Otherwise, it's none of our business. We will use our tongue to speak Krishna's wonderful pastimes and glories, and all the wonderful things that devotees are doing, and to loudly chant his holy name. Should we end here? Is there any questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, you spoke about this necessity of training. So sometimes as leaders or as preachers, we want to train those who come to us. But then we also have our own projects and we try to engage them in various services. So how to understand that our responsibility is to give them nice Krishna conscious training, but not to overly involve them in such a way that in course of time they feel that they are not properly trained, although they were engaged in a lot of services. So how can we make this balance that when people come to us, we are giving them nice Krishna conscious training, but not just getting them involved into service, too much of service.
That is the responsibility of one who is taking charge of any project or of on any level of devotees' lives. We must use our good intelligence. How to balance that? Actually, in devotional service, things should be integrated in such a way that the service itself is a type of training. That means we have to actually teach people the proper consciousness in which they're doing their service. It's not that a service a person is doing to contribute to the project is separate than their training. It's an integral part of it. But in order for it to actually be that way, we have to teach the people, by our example and by our words, the proper consciousness in which to do it. A person may, we may need someone to wash the pots in the devotee's kitchen. Sometimes there's big, big black pots. I remember at New Vrindavan, God, you should have seen those pots. Everything was cooked on wood, and we had big pots. This is early days. And those pots, the outside of the pots, were thick layer of black soot. And we had no hot water. We had no scrub pads. No cloth. So you may be wondering how to get that thick black layer off the entire outside of a gigantic pot. Now you have cleansers and scrub pads and all these nice things. We had none of that. A person had to take ashes from the fire, and sprinkle it all over the pot, and then take a rock from a creek of water. Just take a rock and scrape all the black off the pot. It would take hours for one pot. And everyone in the whole building knew that the pots were being washed. Because when you scrape rocks against steel, and it's not you just lightly scrape with all your might, you have to just be pushing and pulling. Someone's washing the pots. And the pot washer, when he would come out of the pot room, from his lotus feet to the top of his lotus head, whatever black was on the pot was on his body. And then how did they get that off? Because there was no hot water or soap. Because your body's a temple of God. You're supposed to keep that clean too. So that's the way life was in those days. So if a person is asked to wash the pots, if we're actually training a person, that pot washing should be his education. If he's just down there washing the pots, scraping the pots, whatever you might be using as facilities, then there's, of course there's benefit because it's being done ultimately for Krishna. But it shouldn't be an agata sukriti type of credit. There should be consciousness in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam class is actually a place for training, education and training. And beyond the Srimad Bhagavatam class, we should teach people how to apply what they have heard in the classes to their daily service. Prabhupada made it simple. And actually, that was all the pot washers at New Vrindavan in those days. They did it with such incredible enthusiasm. Just because Prabhupada said one line, that when you clean Krishna's pots, you clean your heart. Hare Krishna. So they saw that pot like that, and they were thinking, this is what my heart looks like. They were scraping and scraping and scraping and cleaning and cleaning, and those pots were shining. Shining pots. Because it was such an enthusiasm that I'm cleaning my heart. I'm not just washing a pot, I'm cleaning my heart. And this pot is going to be used to cook an offering that's meant for Krishna, and therefore it should be the ultimately cleanest, best pot it can be, because it's going, because Krishna's food, is his bhoga, is going to be cooked in this. And the cook, I'm the servant of the servant of the cook. I'm assisting that cook. Such a great benediction. I could humbly be the servant of this cook and assist him in his wonderful offering to Krishna. And all the Vaishnavas, they're going to ultimately be taking the prasad from this pot. So I'm serving every Vaishnava in the entire community in the most humble and fortunate way, just by cleaning this pot. And therefore I have, and therefore I will take full bath before I go into the pot room. I won't talk prajalpa when I'm washing the pots, because that vibration will go into the pot. Will pollute everything. I'll just chant Krishna's names, and I'll remember Krishna, and I'll be absolutely as hygienic as possible. This is a brahminical activity. Hare Krishna. You can train a person with all these concepts, and if he's washing his pots with this training, he can go back to Godhead just by washing that pot. Yes? And later on, that pot washer can be a temple president. He can be a spiritual master. Simply on the revelations and realizations he learned through the process of washing pots. So we should take this responsibility to teach people, to train people, how to perform their service in such a way that their service is educational and it is training them in the higher, more subtle principles of pure devotional service. Srila Prabhupada, when people were making life members or distributing books, Prabhupada told them, taught them how to see the Paramatma, pray to the Paramatma in that person's heart, to help them to buy that book so that they could be delivered. The real good book distributors and life membership makers or fundraisers, they weren't just collecting money. They were completely immersed in prayer while they were doing it, praying to Krishna, give me the words to speak to save this person's life. Give this person the faith in Prabhupada to take this book or to give this donation. We're not taking from them. We're giving them a chance to serve Guru and Gauranga. And I must speak, and I must act in such a way that the entire integrity of our whole parampara is being respected by this person. If you're collecting donations with this spirit, just through that process, you can become spiritual master of the world. That's training. We must teach people how to perform their service in the proper way, with the proper etiquette, and with the proper consciousness. Not just do it. Does that answer your question? Thank you. Yes, Mataji.
This is mostly in relation to non-devotees or relatives or friends. Sometimes we are usually sensitive to them and we be nice to them to the extent that at least we don't hurt them and we don't get influenced by them. But sometimes like these people, they have so much expectations, they build so much high expectations from us. And being devotees, we cannot follow everything what they may expect us to do because we have some standards. And then they say that, oh, you have hurt us and you have broken our heart and we have felt bad. So how do we deal with this?
By not taking it seriously. Because you haven't done anything against them to break their heart. You're actually enlightening their hearts if you're not compromising in your devotional principles. Because if they convince you to give up your Krishna consciousness or compromise your principles of bhakti, do you know what a karmic reaction they'll get? If you let them do that, you're not helping them, you're hurting them. After millions and millions of births, you finally come to the path of bhakti. Do you know what kind, if a spirit soul, after millions and millions of lifetimes of suffering, finally comes to the path of pure devotional service? If someone drags that person away from devotional service, do you know what kind of reaction is going to be on that person? We should actually protect our relatives and friends from committing that offense against Krishna by not compromising. However, we should do it with respect, with sensitivity, and with affection. We shouldn't be fanatics. You don't have to tell your parents, "You're in Maya and I'm a great saintly person, so I will never listen to a word you say. Until you chant 16 rounds and come to Mangal Arati every day." That's fanaticism. You should say, "Yes, I'm so grateful to you. You've done so much for me. I honor you. I respect you." And those things that they tell you that you can integrate in your devotional service, you should be happy to do it. But those things that are discouraging your devotional service, you should just very graciously, politely, respectfully go on with your devotional service. And they may say that you have broken their hearts, but actually you haven't broken their hearts. Unless you misuse them or mistreat them. You may be breaking through the illusions within their hearts, and they're thinking that the illusion is their heart. Oh, it is a sacred duty to offer respect and offer gratitude to parents, to relatives who have helped us. But it has to be done with a sensitivity and an intelligence by which we don't actually hurt them. The best example of this to the extremest degree was Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj was never disrespectful to his father. Even though his father was trying to murder him, kill him, poison him, throw him in fire, throw him in oceans, crush him with mountains and elephants, stab him with tridents. Yes? He didn't want Prahlad performing bhakti. But yet we read, Prahlad was always respectful to him, always grateful to him, always kind to him, always affectionate to him, but would never deviate from the principles Narada Muni taught him. So we have to learn this art from Prahlad. That is balance. Prahlad was not a fanatic. He was a gentle, respectful, humble Vaishnava. And he even dealt with, even though his father considered him his worst enemy, Prahlad still understood, he's my father, and I must respect him. Does that answer your question? Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhu.
Maharaj, as you spoke in terms of training different varnas in different ashrams, will there be any need arise to train in different varnas?
Prabhupada has said that there's a need. But in certain ways that happens naturally in a Vaishnav society. Of course, for more formalization to be established, it will be very good. But the very principles of the philosophy to be applied, as Srila Prabhupada has given us in his books, a Brahmin there is much training of Brahminical behavior just integral within our Krishna conscious lifestyle and teachings, is it not? We train pujaris. We should train preachers. We train people how to perform yajnas. And we also train the characteristics they should live by. That's training of Brahman. Training people in the principles of proper management, administration. That's Kshatriya. We don't have too many warriors. We're not allowed to. But that is the training of a Kshatriya. And Vaishyas, we have so many devotees in business. To teach them the proper ethics, proper integrity, proper techniques, that's Vaishya. And Shudra also. So, yes, it is very, very important. Does that answer your question? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, the point that Srila Prabhupada made in the beginning of the purport about the mind and the heart being like an earthen pot, has brought two questions in my heart. Is that in the light of this principle that the heart is like an earthen pot and once broken, it's very, very difficult by any means to pacify it. How do we explain the principle which is being taught in our Vaishnava tradition that if a person begs forgiveness with a very genuine spirit of humility, you know, for the offense that he commits against another Vaishnava, you know, he can't be pardoned.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if the principle is that once your heart is broken, there is no way you can be pacified. But according to our Siddhantas, we see that if a person genuinely begs forgiveness, actually feeling from within that he has actually offended, so then we can, you know, get pacified. And another aspect of this same principle that was coming to my mind is how would we deal with an immature devotee who would every now and then feel offended or think that my heart is broken because you did this or because you did that, and because Prabhupada said in the purport, so my heart can never be pacified now, and then he'd never be ready to forgive anyone.
This verse should be understood in the context in which Prabhupada is speaking. This is not the consciousness that should be thought of by someone who is hurt. This consciousness is how we should treat others to avoid hurting them. That's the intent of what's being spoken. If someone says, you broke my clay harp pot, therefore it can never be repaired and you're responsible, so therefore you should surrender to me to atone for this, that means you completely misunderstand the whole principle of the verse. Amani namana dena kirtaniya sadahari. That's really what this verse is talking about. You can break my heart any way you want. I deserve a million times worse, but I'll never do anything to hurt yours. Unnecessarily. That's the spirit of the verse. As a warning that we're responsible in how we deal with others. Lord Chaitanya taught, offer all respect to others, expect none in return. Even when we chastise someone, it should be done with proper respect and with proper strategic understanding that it's a service. If someone wants to misuse this verse, then that's just due to insincerity, and they'll simply make no spiritual progress through this process. If you break another's heart, you beg forgiveness. That's what it's talking about. It's not talking about if the person's heart is broken, if they beg forgiveness. This verse is really, the application of this verse will be most practically applied according to amanina manadena, to offer all respects to others and expect none in return. And ultimately, however much a person's heart is broken, if they actually surrender to the process of Krishna consciousness, their heart will become transcendentally purified and perfect. That's a fact. But the problem is, if someone has a broken heart, they lose faith in the process of Krishna consciousness, they lose faith in the association of devotees, and they can't surrender to Krishna. But if they do surrender to Krishna, if they do really take to the path of bhakti, then even the most, even a pot that has been shattered into 10 billion pieces can be totally restored in its pristine state if you chant the holy name of the Lord once offenselessly. That is our siddhanta. Look at Dhruva Maharaj. His heart was broken, but he followed the process of Krishna consciousness perfectly, and his heart wasn't broken anymore. It turned from a broken clay pot into a pure, whole, pristine, solid gold pot with beautiful diamonds decorating it. Yes? Because he surrendered to the holy name. He worshipped the deity. He followed the instructions of his spiritual master. So yes, that is the power of bhakti. However, if a person's heart is broken, oftentimes it prevents them from taking to the path of bhakti and from properly associating with devotees. Then it's irreparable. Does that answer your question? Hare Krishna. So we will end here. The cure for all disease is offenselessly chanting the holy names in the association of devotees. And it is the responsibility of every devotee loudly chanting the holy names. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much.